Good morning, all. Good to see everybody here today. Did I turn my microphone on? Yeah, I think I did. All right. Can you hear me all right? It's your tough luck. Well, if you're visiting with us today, we're glad you're here and hope you'll stay around. Let us get acquainted for a minute while you're with us. There's been a lot of interest and discussion generated in the news. You've seen it. You've heard about illegal immigration and a lot of things going on. Doesn't matter what you think about that. You have to agree, and I think everybody agrees, that the people who come to the United States come for a better life. They want a better life for themselves. The difficult thing about that, I think, from our perspective particularly, is a lot of people think that a good life means better job opportunities or better educational opportunities or better business opportunities or some kind of economic benefit that has to do with a better life. And, you know, we understand why people think that way, but the reality, of course, is that a better life is only going to be found by being better people. Our responsibility is to be better people. Living with Jesus Christ really is a better way to live in every regard. I want you to turn with me to the book of James this morning. James chapter 1. James wrote to Christians and he urged them to a better life by following Jesus Christ. That's how you're going to have a better life. Now, James is very emphatic about this. It's really interesting. James is such a fascinating book in many ways. He says, my brothers, my dear brothers, or brothers, something like that, about every eighth verse. About one verse in eight, he turns and just tries to get people's attention. It's like he's saying, now listen, brothers, my dear brothers, you've got to pay attention to what I'm going to say. And so it's very emphatic what he's saying. And he's writing here to Christians to demonstrate and show how living with Jesus Christ really gives us a better life. So we're going to start in James chapter 1. We're going to start reading in verse 19. Let's read down through verse 27, and then we'll come back and talk about what it means to live a better life and how you can have a better life with Christ. Start reading with me, if you would, in James chapter 1, beginning in verse 19. My dear brothers, take note of this. There he goes, trying to get our attention from the very beginning. My dear brothers, take note of this. Everyone should be quick to listen, slow to speak, and slow to become angry. For man's anger does not bring about the righteous life that God desires. Therefore, get rid of all moral filth and the evil that is so prevalent, and humbly accept the word planted in you, which can save you. Do not merely listen to the word and so deceive yourselves. Do what it says. Anyone who listens to the word but does not do what it says is like a man who looks at his face in a mirror and after looking at himself goes away and immediately forgets what he looks like. But the man who looks intently into the perfect law that gives freedom and continues to do this, not forgetting what he has heard but doing it, he'll be blessed in what he does. If anyone considers himself religious and yet does not keep a tight rein on his tongue, he deceives himself, and his religion is worthless. Religion that God our Father accepts as pure and faultless is this: to look after orphans and widows in their distress, and to keep oneself from being polluted by the world. From the very beginning, the first thing that James says to us really is that the righteous life is a life of blessing. I want you to go back to verse 19 with me, if you would. Start in verse 19 and read down through verse 21. Just think about the righteous life being a life of blessing. My dear brothers, take note of this. Everyone should be quick to listen, slow to speak, and slow to become angry. For man's anger does not bring about the righteous life that God desires. Therefore, get rid of all moral filth and the evil that is so prevalent. Humbly accept the word planted in you, which can save you. The righteous life really is a life of blessing. It's a life that blesses us, and it's a life that blesses others. Now, there are a lot of people that wouldn't actually think that that's the case. If you go out here and talk to people about being a Christian, they would not think that that's right. Years ago, Miss Manners... Y'all read Miss Manners in the newspaper? She can be really funny. Judith Martin wrote this book, Miss Manners' Guide to Excruciatingly Correct Behavior. A lot of people think that that's etiquette. You know, it should be painful or you're not doing it right. I think a lot of people think that about Christianity, too. They think that it's just about an excruciatingly correct life. So, Christians should always be very serious and very solemn in everything that they do. In fact, the word joyless springs to mind when we're talking about Christians. We all ought to be very solemn and serious. A lot of people, I think, conceive of Christianity like this. We're going to be miserable here. We're going to kind of pay our dues here and be miserable, not enjoy the good things in life, so that we can all go to heaven later. And everything will be marvelous when we're in heaven. But now, boy, oh, it's time to be gloomy and bad and just excruciatingly correct in every way. That's crazy. A Christian life is a life of blessing. How would you define a blessed life? What does a blessed life look like? Well, a blessed life is one that is characterized by things like love. Love for others, love for strangers, love for enemies, love for our families, love for people around. So it's a life that would be joyous. You know, you'd have to classify it as a life that has a lot of joy in it. A blessed life is one that is at peace with itself and with the whole world, too. At peace with God. You know, we don't run around living in turmoil all the time. We live in peace. It would be a life characterized by, patience, the ability to endure things in life and stick with it, kindness. If we would be kind to one another, that would kind of characterize a blessed life. Gentleness, you know, the ability not to punch somebody in the nose, you know, because they irritate you a little bit. Faithfulness, the ability to keep your word and do what you say you'll do, that would really be a blessed life. And all of that, of course, would come out of a real self-control, the ability to do what you need to do when you need to do it, regardless of how you feel about doing it. So those are the kinds of things that I think would define a blessed life: love and joy and peace and patience and kindness and goodness and faithfulness and gentleness and self-control. And you recognize those are the items that are listed as the fruit of the Spirit in Galatians chapter 5. A blessed life would look like that. A blessed life would be characterized by, a life of grace for everybody. Not just that my life has to be good, but if my life really is going to be blessed, it's got to be a blessing in your life as well. And there always has to be a sense of family, that we're a part of a big family that is a good and wonderful thing. There's a sense of belonging and place in this family. That's a blessed life. That's a righteous life. That's what God wants for us. That's exactly what James is talking about, and I think that's why God calls us to righteousness. Get rid of all the moral filth and the evil that is so prevalent, and humbly accept the Word planted in you, which can save you. It's the Word of God that creates those things in our lives. The moral filth and the evil in our world will just not take us where we want to go. It's not going to do it. Whatever you want in terms of a better life cannot be found in that way. I was on the road this past week, and while I was driving along, I was listening to the radio, some talk show. A guy was taking some calls. A woman called in. They were talking about this case. You've all heard about it till you're sick of hearing about it. About the Duke University case with the lacrosse players there and the stripper that claims she was attacked by these guys. And there's a lot of hubbub and turmoil. This woman called into this radio talk show, and she said, "I want you to understand where I'm coming from, first of all." She says, "I was a stripper for 2 years. I worked as a stripper for 2 years." And she talked about her life doing that, and she said, "It is a very dark life." She said that over and over and over. It's a very dark life. She said, "I got into it because I needed a lot of money fast, and they said I could make a lot of money, and they were right." She said, "I did make a lot of money. But then very quickly, within days," she said, "a lot of that money started going to drugs and alcohol, because that's the only way you can get through a life like that. You have to numb yourself in order to do that." She said, "You develop a very cynical, mean-spirited attitude toward all kinds of people, especially men." And as she talked on, she talked about how dark and bad a life that was, and how it promised such wealth and happiness and fun. You know, you're at the party every night, aren't you? But what it delivered was desperation. And she went on to say that she had come to a very powerful faith in Jesus. And she said, if anybody ever wants to know what Jesus can do in your life, she says, I'm living proof. He's turned me around. She says, I've been out of that life for a long time. I'm married. I have a couple of wonderful kids. I'm married to a wonderful man. I love my life. She said over and over, I love my life now, and I hated my life then. Moral filth and evil will not give you the better life you want. It promises so much and delivers nothing. And that's why God has called us to accept the Word that is planted within us. And this word accept is not just put up with it, but actually welcome it and embrace it and bring it into your life. If you want a better life, then you want a life of blessing. You want a life of righteousness. But it's important, I think, to remember that the blessing is in the doing. Go back to James chapter 1 with me. Look at verse 22 to 25. The blessing is always going to be in the doing. Do not merely listen to the word and so deceive yourselves. Do what it says. Once in a while I'll talk with someone and they'll say something like, well, you can make the Bible say whatever you want it to say. You can interpret it any way you want to. And I want to take them to James 1:22 and say, okay, it says, do what it says. How many different ways can you understand that? You know, about one, you know, that's all. You can't make the Bible mean whatever you think it means. It means what it means, and that's all. Do not merely listen to the Word and so deceive yourselves. Do what it says. Anyone who listens to the Word but does not do what it says is like a man who looks at his face in a mirror and after looking at himself goes away and immediately forgets what he looks like. But the man who looks intently into the perfect law that gives freedom and continues to do this, not forgetting what he has heard but doing it, he'll be blessed in what he does. The blessing is always in the doing. You cannot do what you don't know. If you don't know it, you can't do it. And so that's why we lay a lot of stress on Bible reading and Bible study. How many of you are doing the daily Bible reading schedules? Isn't that great? You're spending some time in the Word every day, and your life is blessed because we spend a lot of energy talking about Bible reading and Bible study and the importance of Bible classes and the importance of independent Bible study. You do this at home on your own time, and you get to examine and dig for the things that you're interested in. All those things are important. I wonder sometimes if we shouldn't put maybe a little more stress on application. You know, put it into practice in your life. It's not enough just to know what it says. We actually have to do these things in our life. One guy put it like this. We learned the golden rule. Now it's time to put it into practice. And that's right. That's right. We need to spend a little more time applying the Word because the blessing really is in the doing. Jesus stressed this so often. How many times did Jesus say something about the importance of actually doing the Word? In Luke chapter 6 and verse 46, he says, why do you call me Lord, Lord, and do not do what I say? You know, if you're going to call him Lord, Lord means boss, master, he's in charge. Why would you call him Lord and then not do what he says? You're giving a false message there. In Matthew chapter 12 and verse 50, Jesus said, whoever does the will of my Father is my brother and sister and mother. People came to him and said, well, your mother and your brothers are outside. He says, I'll tell you who my mother and my brothers are. Those who do the will of my Father. If you do the will of my Father, you really are my brother, my sister, my mother. We're related. And then, you know, one of the most famous passages, I guess, is John chapter 14, verse 15. That last night of Jesus' life in that upper room with his disciples, one of the things that he says to them is, if you love me, you will keep my commandments. You'll actually do it. If you love me, you will do what I command. Jesus laid an awful lot of stress on our necessity to do His will. It's not enough just to know it. We actually have to perform His will in our lives. And when we do His will, our lives are blessed. It's not until you do it, though, that our lives are blessed. Years ago, Merv Griffin had a show on TV. I'm really dating myself here. How many of you remember the Merv Griffin show on TV? Okay, how many of you have never heard of Merv Griffin in your life? Yeah, okay, see, we got several of those. Okay. Merv Griffin had a TV show, and it was one of those interview shows, and he had this bodybuilder on one day. This guy's up there, all the muscles and everything. And the bodybuilder goes up there, and he's doing his little dance routine, you know, doing his poses. Everybody see how strong he is. And look a lot like me, I know. And so he's up there, and he gets all done with his little routine, and he comes over and sits down with Merv Griffin. Merv Griffin is talking to him and asks him several questions. And one of the things that Merv Griffin said is, you know, you're really strong. He talked about how much weight he could lift and the bench presses and the squats and, you know, the deadlift, all the weight that he could really handle quite easily. And Merv Griffin says, obviously, you're very, very strong. What do you do with all those muscles? What do you use them for? And the guy jumped up and he starts doing his routine again, you know. And Merv Griffin stops and he says, no, wait a minute. I understand that. What I want to know is what you do with all that strength. You know, what kind of work do you do that requires that you use those muscles? What do you use those muscles for? And the guy was baffled. He couldn't quite grasp what Merv Griffin was asking him, because in his mind, the only reason to have the muscles is to look good. But Merv Griffin is thinking, you have great strength for a reason. You know, you do something with this. And that guy didn't think so. When we do God's will, life is blessed. We learn His will in order to do it. Last week in the newspaper we saw a poll, I'm sure you saw in the Oklahoma, and there was a poll about church attendance. And guess who's number one in the United States of America? All religious groups and church attendance. We're number one. Our people attend services weekly more than any other religious group in the United States of America. We're number one. Isn't that great? Tell me something. If we're number one in church attendance, how come we have so many problems? Why do we have so many people who have drug and alcohol problems in churches of Christ? If we're number one in church attendance, why do we have so much teen pregnancy in churches of Christ? All right, we had a real high-profile case in Edmond, a guy involved with child porn. Why does that happen? It's because we're not putting it into practice. We know it. We've heard it. Sat through a zillion sermons just like this one. We're just not doing it. There's not going to be any blessing to it until we do it. Knowing is for doing always. You go to college to get a degree so that you can put that knowledge to work someplace. Knowing is for doing always. The blessing is always in the doing, and we are not going to get a better life until we actually do the will of Christ in our lives. That's when the blessing occurs. And when the blessing occurs, then real disciples make a difference. Go back with me to James, if you would, and let's take a look at the last couple of verses here, just verse 26 and 7, James chapter 1, and talk about how real disciples do make a difference. James says, if anyone considers himself religious, yet does not keep a tight rein on his tongue, he deceives himself and his religion is worthless. Religion that God our Father accepts as pure and faultless is this, to look after orphans and widows in their distress and to keep oneself from being polluted by the world. Real disciples make a difference, first of all, because real disciples discipline themselves. You know, it's not really our responsibility to point out other people's faults to them. We're often very good at that, but it's not really our responsibility to point out their faults. Our responsibility is to take care of the problems right here inside ourselves. We need to dig deep within ourselves and handle the discipline that we need. For James, the whole idea of personal discipline is pretty much summed up in the tongue. You go to James chapter 3 and look at what James has to say about the tongue. And basically, the short message is, if you can control your tongue, you can do anything. And he suggests that we control our tongues so that we can discipline all of our lives. One guy put it like this. We spend the first 2 years of a child's life teaching him to talk. He spends the rest of his life learning when to shut up. And we've all got that problem, don't we? We pretty well learned how to talk. Now our problem is learning when not to talk. I heard about an official down in Florida who was brought into a county office. I think he was a treasurer, but I'm not sure about that. And the outgoing treasurer took him aside and he says, "Listen, in this job you're going to have countless opportunities to keep your mouth shut. Take advantage of all of them." Now, don't let that pass you by. We need to discipline ourselves. Real disciples make a difference in the world by disciplining themselves. And real disciples make a difference in the world by helping other people. The hallmark of Christianity, I guess, for all its history has been that we help others. We help strangers, we help our enemies, we help those. You know, and one of the things that the early persecutors of Christians particularly couldn't quite grasp, they did not understand, why would we help people we're not related to? Just because we happen to worship the same God, we actually get involved in these people's lives. They couldn't grasp that idea that you help people on the basis of a shared faith. Couldn't get it. But that's a hallmark of Christianity. We help people. And that, of course, makes a difference in their lives. When we help them, it makes a difference in their lives. It also makes a difference in our lives. There's a young woman named Laverne in Los Angeles. I just read about her this past week. When she was 16 years old, her best friend was killed in a drive-by shooting. And she was furious and hated the people responsible for that and wanted more than anything else revenge. She wanted revenge on those people. She wanted to track them down and find them and kill them. She didn't want justice. She wanted revenge. And she dreamed about it and she talked about it and she thought about it. And her grandmother got hold of her one day and said, "Laverne, you know what Jesus said. You know what he said about loving your enemies and forgiving people." She said, "Laverne, if you allow yourself to be eaten up by this, it will kill you. You need to do something different and get a grip on this." And Laverne started thinking about it and she thought, the reason this whole thing came about is because these kids are unstructured in their lives. They don't have moms. They don't have dads to discipline them. They don't know any way to live. But there are after-school programs to help some of these kids, and maybe I can make a difference with one kid. So she started volunteering for one of these after-school programs. And she started spending time there, and she spent a year working in these after-school programs helping these kids. By the time she graduated from high school, she wanted to go to college and get a degree so that she could come back and do that full-time. She wanted to make a difference in other people's lives, and at the same time, it was making a difference in her lives. That's what real disciples of Jesus do. They make a difference by helping people. And finally, real disciples sweeten the whole world. They take a little corruption out of the world. Religion that God our Father accepts as pure and faultless as this, to look after orphans and widows in their distress, there's helping other people, and to keep oneself from being polluted by the world. That's really our responsibility. We can sweeten the world by just taking a little corruption out of it. Jesus talked about the disciples as salt and light and leaven in the world. And the thing about that is just a little bit of each of those characteristics will really change the situation wherever it is. A little bit of salt makes things salty. A little bit of leaven, got the whole dough will rise. A little light will illuminate the whole room. Jesus calls for us to sweeten the world and just be His disciples. You know, everybody in the world seeks significance. We all want to be somebody important. We all want to make a difference somewhere, somehow. Christians do. Christians do make a difference. We are significant. You can be significant within this church family, certainly, but you can be significant.